Before we begin, I wanted to give a huge shout out to the folks at Amazon Music for partnering with us on this episode of the Inside Line F1 podcast. But more on this later. Right then, let's get right into today's episode. Everyone, happy new year and welcome to the 2023 Formula One season's opening race. We have seen an amazing testing where Red Bull Racing have had their car go flat out. As always, Ferrari look closer, Mercedes are somewhere out there, McLaren have had a bit of an iffy weekend, Williams dead last as always. Wait, same story all over again? Is it 2023 or 2024, Kunal? I can't quite tell what year it is, honestly.
Well, it seems literally where we left off 2023. So you wouldn't be surprised, or any F1 viewer wouldn't be surprised, if it seemed just like 2023 as well. The cars also looked almost similar. And of course, the drivers are the same. But Somil, actually, today was the first episode of the Max Verstappen podcast. This was the Bahrain recording that they had. This is also the first in-season episode of the Inside Line F1 podcast. My goodness, the season is here, but nothing seems to have changed, or has it?
Same hosts on the Inside Line F1 podcast, which means you get the same goodness, the same banter, the same insights, the same analysis, and on the track, same old, same old. Now, in that respect, we clearly mean that it might have been a bit of an okay TV show, but there are so many great underlying stories that we need to talk about. I mean, for real, right? The kind of issues we have on offer, it's insane. We literally had David Coulthard and Alex Jakes, and I had listened to them, not Crofty for some reason. I don't know. I'm kind of weird in that regard. But Coulthard and Alex Jakes were literally talking about Formula One cars having... What dash would they prefer? Having a dash on their chassis or their steering? Because eventually they were confused at the Fairmont hairpin. Would you want your screen to be turning with you on the steering wheel? Because Williams had issues on their steering wheel. Like, the kind of random stuff that commentary ends up discussing, it shows you that clearly something's up and Formula One is back to its wacky self.
Yeah. One of the reasons commentary also discusses a lot of offbeat topics is when the race just about gets a little boring. Because is that the word you'd use to describe the opening round in Bahrain, the 2024 Formula One season, Samuel?
Are you feeding a word into my mouth? That's what a good journalist does, right? They feed you the words in your mouth.
Or do you have another word in your stomach which you're going to just blurt out?
I think the ideal one for that would be expected. Is it not? I mean, when you read everything from testing, it's a solid 6 out of 10 of a TV product. But in terms of the stories, Kunal, I mean, that's what really excites me. Because if I look at that TV show, which is literally what it is, right? And you look at it and go, okay, not too many interesting battles. Some really fun ones at the top. A mediocre race in terms of strategy. Max winning. Okay, boring. But the kind of things we're about to uncover today, like the issues of Ferrari, Williams and their dashboard issues, Mercedes and the trouble they had, why McLaren weren't good enough, how a Haas so good in qualifying, and also why AlphaTauri actually let Yuki Tsunoda go behind instead of Daniel Ricciardo. I mean, these things are crazy stories to dissect.
They are, absolutely. And, you know, before we actually get into that, Formula One, given all the off-track controversies that have happened, specifically with Christian Horner, Red Bull Racing, etc., FIA being involved, FOM being involved. The one thing the whole sport would have hoped for is a banger of an opening race to the season, because then the focus would just go away from all the off-track stories to everything that happened on track. And I think it was the last 3 years that Bahrain has always delivered an entertaining race. It's just failed to do so in 2024. But having said that, let's just dig right in, because lots of off-track... Well, on track, but, you know, offbeat incidents that happened. You mentioned Williams and their their dash. You know, they first time have gone from the chassis-mounted dash to the steering wheel-mounted dash. One would have imagined it would have been easy, but Logan Sargeant had his steering wheel swapped in qualifying, and he had not a four, but a five-wheel pit stop in the race because his steering wheel during the race was also swapped. And, you know, he was given clear instructions that, Logan, remove the steering wheel and you will give it on the right. Remember, you will give it on the right. Remember, you will give it on the right. So that was one of those instructions that kept going. Then another instruction actually also to Logan when he pitted for the first time. He said, remember, we're not the last team on the grid. That means we're not the last team in the pit lane, right? Because that's that's another change from 2023 to 2024. So again, another offbeat story since I'm anyway on that. Lewis Hamilton, 1% on the battery. Recharging was an issue, is what people were saying. But his seat was broken. And I almost thought that the FIA would intervene on safety grounds. So not sure what part of the seat was broken or not. But my goodness, Saumil, did Bahrain reveal a sort of a pecking order for us? Because that's what we were all hoping for it would do as the first race of the season.
Yeah, it very clearly did. And in that pecking order, it's very clear to see that AlphaTauri are neutral. Now, I just like to touch upon this for 1 second, because I don't understand why it's blowing up so much on the internet about Tsunoda complaining, Ricardo saying that I have nothing to say, and AlphaTauri making it a whole grand affair out of something which, at least in my head, is a very clear call. I just don't get what the drama is all about. But Daniel Ricciardo opted for the soft compound tyres at the very end, which, again, was not part of the plan. Yuki just wanted to go with the plan. He just went for the hards. And, of course, AlphaTauri. Wait, they're not AlphaTauri anymore, though. They are V-Carb. Okay, so the RB team basically said, Ricardo's on the softer tyres, let him go past. It's as simple as that, Kunal. And this sort of issue, for some reason, is blowing up into something extreme, because we lack drama in any other things. And because the pecking order is so similar and so, let's say, unchanged last year, even a story like this is becoming so big.
Yeah, and while everyone thinks that Ricardo on the soft is obvious choice to give track position over, let's remember he was on a 16-lap-old soft while Yuki Tsunoda was also on a 16-lap-old hard. So the question in my mind was, have the softs degraded enough? Because the first stint that everybody ran was a 12, 14, 15-lap stint anyway. So Ricardo not being quick enough, like Yuki Tsunoda nicely pointed out in his onboard commentary, was actually down to Ricardo's tires also not being there, right? But, okay. The other off-track story or offbeat story, what happened with Leclerc? He was just unable to stop that Ferrari. Is that Ferrari really that quick that he just couldn't stop? Well, the truth is, and this was revealed post-race on the radio, and the radio wasn't or isn't yet broadcast on YouTube or wherever else. They had different temperature readings on the front and the front left and the front right brakes on Leclerc's car, which is why the car was pulling in one direction, and which is why Leclerc said that he was just, you know, he was not sure what the car would do under braking, right? And Saumil, isn't this usually what we experience on our road cars? I mean, I don't drive a Ferrari for a road car, but on our road car, sometimes you just brake and the car's going left and you're like, okay, I just got to fix it. Now imagine all that money you spend, all the brand and the resources that Ferrari has, and they have typical road car challenges as well. But yeah, you can argue it's a car after all, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Just one that's extremely fast and one that's not quite working in the way that they 100% want to. Let's talk about that for a second, because in my head, and clearly for everyone as well, that's quite a big story, right? Ferrari making a proper drama about their car being better than what it was last year and creating a proper humdrum about it. And the fact is, it is better. Clearly, we can tell that this car is a lot better in terms of managing degradation and at the high-speed corners. But speaking back to that, actually linking back to that pecking order you mentioned, Kunal, Carlos Sainz revealed something very interesting, because in the post-race interview, when David Coulthard asked him about why he didn't opt for this, why didn't he opt for the soft compound tires in the final stint, he mentioned that even though the car is better in terms of deg from last year, they aren't comfortable enough to put on the soft compound tires because the car isn't that good at the deck. And that reveals quite a fair bit that Ferrari, even though they've taken a big step ahead of the likes of Mercedes and McLaren, that big jump to Red Bull, I mean, that's a while ago. That's a big way off.
Yeah, Carlos Sainz, clearly the man who needs to have a job next year, and he needs a really good job at probably one of his best, best advertising that he's ever done. And he's showed that when he really is in form, he can be in form, right? So while Ferrari of Leclerc was struggling, Carlos was moving. And one of the things Carlos said post-race is, I always hoped that the car in 2024 allowed me to overtake, because I spent a lot of time defending in 2023, and I actually, for once, have a car that can help me overtake, right? He was very close on pace with Checo Perez through the final stint. And also, you know, Ferrari's not the best on tires, as you have also been saying, but they say they've made a step forward, right? So Bahrain, in some ways, is an indicator that they could still stay with the Red Bull of Checo Perez. And that means they have made a step forward with their tire degradation. Like Checo said, like Carlos said, I made all those overtakes, but I did not suffer from overheating or any extra degradation. So all in all, I think Ferrari would fancy themselves out here. And I think from a Carlos Sainz perspective, to be on the podium, you know, despite having won, the only driver to have won a race in the last whatever number of races, apart from Max Verstappen and Checo Perez, is Carlos Sainz. But he has been out-qualified by Leclerc for, I think, 8 or 9 races in a row itself, right? So great advertisement for Carlos Sainz, which I'm pretty sure you're very pumped up about, Samuel.
I am completely. But I find it interesting now that Ferrari are firmly second in the pecking order, which means we need to talk a little bit more about the other teams as well. But I want to talk about this as well. 55 race wins, Kunal, for Max Verstappen. It's not a joke. Even though success has now become predictable for Max, even though we take it as a guarantee that to watch Formula One and to enjoy it, you need to basically keep your hand on the guy at P1 and only watch it from P2 downwards, because that's what makes it fun, because Formula 1.5 is really where the action is. But regardless, 55 race wins for someone who's barely, 25? Whatever he might be, Max Verstappen. I mean, I know we might be repetitive when we say the same thing, but I suppose repetition is what makes perfection and greatness. Just like with Max, to be able to perform at that high level, even though a winter has passed, even though your competitors are closer to you, even though many things in life might have changed, same if not a higher level of performance.
Yep, and sticking forward on Max, 55 race wins, also 8th consecutive race win. Remember, he's got the 10 consecutive race win record from last year. He's now on an 8th consecutive race win. So could he better that is something that could go. Also, his 5th career Grand Slam. He did not drop a position in the entire 57-lap race. And are we in for a boring season altogether? I have 2 stats that could make such a prediction come true. For the first time, this is the first one, for the first time in the history of Formula One, and I'm saying this again, in the history of Formula One, for the first time, the opening race of the season did not have a retirement, right? So that's one. The second is that in 2023, Max Verstappen crossed the line to win with Checo Perez in second. So it was a Red Bull 1-2, but Max was 11 seconds ahead of Checo Perez. In 2024, he actually doubled that gap to Perez. He finished 22 seconds ahead. Could this be a sign of things to come? It bloody well could be so, right? And just to put the pecking order in perspective, which you've kindly been answering as well, in my mind, it's Max Verstappen at the top. Then there's a gap to Ferrari, and then a slight gap to maybe Mercedes and McLaren, okay? And that's what we also saw today. Then a very large gap to Aston Martin in fifth. Then a bit of a large gap to Sauber, Haas, Racing Bulls. and another large gap to Williams and Alpine. And Alpine, of course, is last, as we've seen. But that's pretty much the pecking order I have sort of pulled out. And if I can move on to, McLaren and Mercedes, it's actually so close between them. The track position was extremely vital to finishing ahead in the race. So we saw how Lewis Hamilton actually jumped Oscar Piastri, yeah. And then Piastri just couldn't claw that back, right? But Mercedes actually, very openly said after the race that our cooling configuration wasn't optimal for the conditions. And that's why both the drivers were actually forced to do a lot of management for temperatures, right? And they actually didn't encounter these issues in FP2 during similar conditions. So very early on, they had very high PU temperatures and the drivers were also running in traffic. So can you imagine? So many laps in Bahrain, so many sessions, and guess what? It's the cooling configuration that caught them. And then Mercedes also accepted that their tire degradation wasn't as strong as Ferrari's, right? And they were a large chunk of Red Bull.
And this makes it all the more fun because Bahrain is just one type of circuit. There are going to be other ones as well, other places where Mercedes come in stronger. But it feels very much like an evolution of last year in terms of where the pecking order is, where the cars is as well. I don't think there are going to be any major dramatic changes, but let's see. But what I found dramatic was McLaren not being where they should have been, Kunal, ideally. I mean, in my head, I expected a lot more from them in terms of performance, in terms of preparation. And I wondered, throughout preseason testing, why were McLaren referencing their performance last year in testing and not where they were towards the end of the year? Because ideally, as a team that's finished so strongly towards the end of last year, your benchmark should be something higher, not the terrible situation that you find yourself in last year. But it's kind of making sense now because very clearly, McLaren, at least at Bahrain, and this is something that we'd like to validate at, say, other circuits like a Silverstone, which is a lot more high speed, a lot more flowing, a lot less about deg than Bahrain. Where do McLaren stand there? What about Jeddah? How good are they at a circuit like that, where it's extremely fast and the corners keep coming at you and the tarmac is a lot smoother? And what about Aston Martin? Would they be 100 seconds behind there or even better or worse? Because that was a surprising gap. 100 seconds behind Red Bull. It's surely an evolution from the lows that they reached towards the end of last year. But 100 seconds, Kunal, I mean, that number takes a while to digest over a race distance. When I had and I was lucky enough to be joined by a new F1 fan with me while watching this race. And touch wood, he's also getting into Formula One now. And you can sense the pride in my voice as I say this. But the only question on his mind was, bro, if you're a factory like Aston Martin, why are you 100 seconds behind at the same place where you got a podium last year? And it's a valid question to ask.
It is. And I'm going to first address McLaren because very interestingly, this is the first time since 2021 that McLaren has scored at an opening race. And they, of course, scored with both their drivers, right? And Lando Norris was very evidently saying this isn't a really McLaren favoring track, Bahrain, right? The wind conditions sort of caught them out. But the gap between Norris and Russell was at the checkered flag was just 1.6 seconds. So in my mind, McLaren are probably just, they were disadvantaged at the circuit, which means the next few races will be interesting to see how, the form factor or the pecking order between McLaren and Mercedes keeps changing or not. And on to Aston Martin. Yes, it's scary. This is where they ended off 2023 in, the fifth fastest team, and they've continued that in 24. Could they build from here? That's what Fernando Alonso has been saying post-race. And Fernando Alonso qualifying in P6, he said that was unrealistic and put a lot of unfair expectations on us when technically in the race trim, we've seen we are the fifth fastest team. I expect all of this to change, hopefully, as teams have actually learned a lot more about themselves in the opening round of the season, right? And I'm actually going to go back to McLaren because we saw very, very interesting... Mercedes, actually. We saw George Russell make an uncharacteristic mistake into turn 10, because that turn 10, another offbeat thing, was catching out so many drivers, especially when the cars were full of fuel in their tanks, right? You know, that left-hander, which you're sort of going into after ninth, which is also a left-hander. And George Russell actually had a very Leclerc-esque locking while he was turning left, only to then be overtaken by Charles Leclerc out there, right? So, very, very exciting time, and also an exciting time. I'm just going to flip, because Haas, they were in the battle. They said they are focusing on better tire degradation, and what better a circuit to actually show their improvement at than Bahrain. And I'm sure they would be bummed with how Nico Hülkenberg gave up the chance of starting in the top 10, because Nico Hülkenberg was the star of recording in qualifying on the Friday. But on Sunday, he went 0-0 in, you know, those 200 meters that go from the start grid to the entry of turn one. Now, it could have been a case of what if had Nico sort of stayed in position in terms of trying to see if their tire degradation actually would have resulted in them scoring a point or fighting for one, because it was only the top five teams that scored points, you know, two by two, all of them. So nobody else has scored points in Bahrain.
Yeah, exactly. That was strange, I think. I thought there was a greater chance for a team like Haas to be somewhere up there with Nico, but it's a shame the way it worked out. And also, I found it a little heartbreaking that the V-Carb boys, or the RB boys, whatever we're calling them, could not make their way in. But what it really stems in my mind is a big question, which is, why are the teams just not so dramatically different to where they were last year? And it's something that I'd like to highlight, because we've had the shortest winter after 2021 in Formula One history. We've barely had a winter. The cars barely have had a chance to evolve, for designs to come up in a dramatic way. And also, the testing has only been limited to a couple of days here and there. So like in the past, where teams could actually test a lot of cars, or even at least have that one extra winter month to be able to come up with interesting concepts, we've not had that. And so naturally, this feels more like a 2023 version B, rather than in 2024 itself, which means it's a longer extended, at least virtually, a longer extended 47 race season, because that's the kind of way things have progressed, just with a 1 or 2 month gap in the middle. It doesn't feel like Formula One has given enough time for teams to come up with something that's dramatically different. And I know it's a very subjective topic to talk upon, because obviously there's more money with more races and a shorter winter. But just hypothetically, theoretically, wouldn't it be nicer for teams to take more time to evolve with these things? Just hypothetically.
I mean, I actually have a different view on that, Saumil, because a lot of teams have actually changed concepts. It just so happens that even after having, you know, stirred the whole pot of concepts, they pretty much landed up in the same place. I mean, look at Alpine, and that's the last team we should talk of, because they are last in the pecking order, right? They changed the concept. They were the slowest in qualifying. They were the slowest in the race, bar for, you know, Bottas, who had a really long pit stop, and then Sargeant, who decided to just drive straight off at turn four, right? But I think the teams have actually got innovative concepts. I mean, Mercedes has changed a concept. Ferrari's changed a concept, as we've seen and we've discussed in the previous episodes. It just so happens that there hasn't been much of a change in the pecking order. But like we said, even in the pre-season episodes, and you know this, Saumil, right? Bahrain is, we are the pecking order is over-indexed on the Bahrain, you know, performances that strengths or limitations, right? Let's see what Jeddah can bring. Let's see what the few other next few circuits can sort of bring, different characteristics and so on. And let's see if there is actually an even tighter battle possible, because truth be told, it is a tight battle. Just that teams have bunched up with larger gaps in the middle, but I expect those gaps to be narrowed down in the coming races. That's just my gut feeling.
Yeah, and for Alpine's sake, let's hope that happens, because there's nothing else to do there, right? I mean, a couple of other engineers now, also at a management level, believe it or not, have resigned from the team, which means two new heads are coming to Alpine just when the team is about to drown. Not drown, really, but just really drop in terms of performance. I think that would be a more measured comment to make. But I find it amazing. More management instability, more chaos in the background, which means more chaos on the track. The only fun thing is the drivers, surprisingly for being French, are united at once, which is nice that that collective spirit is still there. But I find it amazing how the car is overweight, but it's not really overweight as though, is it, though, Kunal? I mean, in terms of the other teams, it's just that they've not lost enough weight compared to where the others have. And that's the kind of sliding scale that Formula One works on.
Although, you know, Pierre Gasly actually said that they're not really just overweight. They just lack mechanical grip. And that's what they're trying to claw back with their, you know, understanding this concept better. Let's remember, 12 months ago, we were literally talking the same way about McLaren. You know, we saw the first 7-8 races of the season. They were nowhere till they brought an upgrade. Could Alpine be able to do something similar? Will they be? And I would love to see that, because Works team, two very good drivers, they've gone through turmoil, they continue through that turmoil as well, you know, and more teams being competitive. That's all that I really care about eventually for Formula One.
Yeah, let's wait and see if they've got what it takes. At least the drivers are united. Let's see if they can bring something else in the background as well. But folks, that's all it is from our Bahrain GP review. But we'll be coming up with the Jeddah preview in a couple of days' time as well. Take care, folks. We'll be back on the Inside Line F1 podcast very, very soon. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Inside Line F1 podcast. Before we ended, I just wanted to say a huge thank you to Amazon Music once again for partnering with us on this episode of the podcast.